Hello, everyone. Dan Delman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. And first of all, this morning, we're going to Central America. And you think that may be a little odd, but this is hurricane season still in that area. The hurricane season is the latest climate threat which is facing Central America. For Central America, this year's storm season has been relentless. Already struggling under the economic toll of COVID-19, the developing region was battered by Hurricane Eta in early November and had a little time to regroup before Hurricane Iota came blowing in. And it was the 30th named storm in a record-breaking hurricane season in the Atlantic. It made landfall in Nicaragua on November the 16th. People in Central America aren't the ones who cause climate change, but they are among the most affected. Devastation Eta killed some 150 people and forced 300,000 to flee their homes as floods and mudslides swallowed up entire towns across Guatemala, Honduras, and beyond. The devastated communities faced strong winds and up to 30 inches of rain, and relief agencies say that crowding in shelters and cuts to water and power supplies might trigger spikes in COVID-19 cases. Record storms have been occurring there. Neither Eta nor Iota has been as devastating as Central America's Hurricane Mitch, which killed 11,000 people back in 1998. But we may now be entering an era when very deadly storms are no longer once in a generation events. Meteorologists tracked more hurricanes in the Atlantic this season than ever before. And though no one storm can be blamed on climate change, scientists all agree that a warming planet makes weather patterns more destructive. The region's presidents say they would work together to pressure richer countries to quickly release aid via regional development banks. Countries that have recognized they are the main drivers of climate change have the money available, but it's extremely difficult for them to access it in Central America. With the UN's Climate Fund for developing countries drastically underfunded and extreme weather becoming more common, it's an argument that we'll be hearing a lot. And I'm back after that short break. I want to tell you about Kim Ng. She's the Major League Baseball's first female general manager. Having been passed over for so many jobs, despite her wealth of experience, Kim Ng remembers feeling a weight lift off of one shoulder when the Miami Marlins named her the first female general manager in a major league men's pro sports league on November the 13th. She's also baseball's first East Asian American GM. Half an hour later, Ng added during an introductory press conference, "I realized it had been just transferred to the other shoulder," unquote. Ng knows her performance could determine whether more doors open for women working in the clubby confines of men's sports. "You're bearing a torch for so many," she said. "This is a big responsibility, but I'm willing to take it on." Ng became the youngest assistant GM in baseball when the New York Yankees hired her at age 29. And that was back in 1998. She won three World Series with that team and then worked as assistant GM for the LA Dodgers from 2002 to 2011 before joining the Major League Baseball front office as a top executive. And that's where she's been recently before this latest promotion. There's an adage, "You can't be it if you can't see it," she said. And now I see it. And now on to something else. And we'll be right back in just a moment. The pandemic's bloom of startups. That's my lead in today for this. What I'm referring to is crisis breeds opportunities. In a little known challenge to the economic fallout of the pandemic, millions of people have turned the crisis into an opportunity for progress. That is especially true in the United States. According to the Census Bureau, new businesses are springing up at the fastest rate in more than a decade. So far in 2020, the Bureau has received more than 3 million applications for employer identification numbers. The comparable figure for the same period last year was 2.7 million. Faced with furloughs or layoffs, many people are fashioning their own form of work. They see the pandemic as a now or never time to pursue their dream. Choose your cliche to explain this burst of entrepreneurship. Necessity is the mother of invention, or sweet are the uses of adversity. Some people can obtain loans, but many start with their own savings. They're driven by the passion of a good idea to invest in a new service or a new product. They tap into unexplored creativity, flexibility, and adaptability. The most important lesson of COVID-19 is learning to adapt. While many existing businesses have been forced to shut down, optimistic newcomers push ahead, in part out of a joy in being their own boss. The pandemic has produced a supercharged version of creative destruction. That is the theory that a good economy thrives when older businesses lose their way and innovative ones spot an opening. That, Churd, is also putting the lie to the idea that only big corporations will survive the pandemic. One reason many of these new businesses are enjoying early success is that customers crave in-person buying experiences after long periods of social isolation. That's especially true when customers can meet new people, such as in a cafe. Other entrepreneurs spot new trends, such as a strong demand for bicycles, a strong demand for house improvement, that they can supply with new ideas. Starting a new venture can really be scary, but it can also be liberating. People find they must draw on their innate qualities, such as a humility to serve or the courage to test a new idea. Those are the fuel behind any new venture and are just one of the many salves during the pandemic. We're back again, and I have a question for you. Did you know, as language evolves, names are bound to change? What I'm referring to is this. The football team in our nation's capital has had since last July a strangely literal name, the Washington Football Team. It is not that the people of Washington lack imagination. This plain moniker for the team is a placeholder until the team, formerly known as the Washington Redskins, can figure out what it will be going forward in the next decade or so and beyond. Protests by Native American activists and pressure from sponsors forced the team and other businesses whose names are increasingly considered offensive, such as Squaw Valley Ski Resort in Lake Tahoe, California, to reckon with their legacy and their future. The football team's leadership had resisted changing its name for decades, arguing that Redskins, in fact, honored Native people. Its owner, Dan Schneider, defended the name in 2013 by saying, "It is a symbol of everything we stand for: strength, courage, pride, and respect. The same values that we know guide Native Americans and which are embedded throughout their rich history." A pro Redskins website, which is now defunct, cited the work of linguist Yves Goddard, who studies Native American languages. And Dr. Goddard argued that a 1725 French account of the Taensa tribe from present-day Louisiana records that they call themselves in their language red men. A century later, Native people in the area were referring to themselves as Peau Rouge, or red skins. Thus, Dr. Goddard asserts, the team's origin is entirely benign. But etymology is not destiny. The connotations of words change over time. Some words that were once inoffensive, that were indeed the default terms for what they represent, are now obscenities. Dictionaries today seem to agree that redskin is on the same trajectory. The Merriam-Webster and the Oxford English Dictionary both call it offensive. The ski resort announced that it would change its name about a month after the Washington football team step. Squaw has also become a derogatory term today. Originally, the word squaw, that's S-Q-U-A, simply meant woman in Wapanak. Colonists quickly applied the word to all Native women, regardless of how they referred to themselves in their own language or how far away they were from Eastern Massachusetts. The management of the football team and of the ski resort understand that many people have strong attachments to the old names, having grown up watching the games or skating at the resort. But as the resort's president, Ron Cohen, acknowledges, he said, quote, "We recognize that our love of this place and our cherished memories do not justify continuing to use such a divisive and hurtful word." The resort has assembled a team to come up with a new name in 2021. For the Washington football team, though, it's easy. How about a more pugnacious name? How about the powerful, the Washington politicians, huh? Now it's time for a global view. In other words, what are foreign newspapers saying about the issues of the day? If we go to Egypt, to Cairo, to the Al Aram newspaper, they had a story recently which said what French involvement in Middle East diplomacy might mean. Quote, the age of deep American involvement in the Middle East is coming to a close, according to a former assistant foreign minister for Egypt. The two visits by French President Emmanuel Macron to Beirut on 6th of August and on 31st of August signal a re-involvement by the French in the Middle East. Needless to say, France on its own cannot make up for the military presence and diplomatic clout of the United States in the region. French diplomacy to succeed in the region should steer away from taking sides in the Sunni-Shia confrontation. Renewed involvement by France in Middle Eastern affairs is welcomed by Arab governments, and that is a very good starting point for President Macron in his quest to make France an indispensable and reliable partner in the search for security, stability, and prosperity in the Middle East and North Africa. And then we see on the other side of the world, from Porto, Spain, Trinidad, from a newspaper there called the Trinidad and Tobago Guardian, this article: to help the world find peace, look to Gandhi. The world needs a paradigm to shift towards universal peace. And Trinidad and Tobago is no exception, writes the former local government councillor, Paras Ramutar. The collapse of our civilization demonstrates that we have lost the reverence for life. Our escape route is to follow the Gandhian approach as it has the capacity of integrating the organizational and ethical aspects of our social system. Mahatma Gandhi postulated several specific moral and ethical pillars for our human survival in a divided world. He defined them as the equality of man, the dignity of the human person, the ultimate victory of truth over falsehood, the ultimate defeat of brute force by the all-pervading strength of the inner moral force of man. Now, as we near the end of today's program, I've got a couple of suggestions for unique Christmas gifts. The first of all, did you know that cell phones can be covered with more than 17,000 bacterial gene copies? That's 10 times as much bacteria as the average toilet seat. This is what one study found, and it gives one pause, certainly. Oblio, that's the name of a company, solves that problem and charges your device at the same time. The wireless charging station resembled a stylish vase and uses UVC light to sanitize your phone. It's said to kill 99% of the bacteria on its surface in just 20 minutes. I won't tell you how much it costs. That may be something for you to find out. The device has not yet been tested, but it is going to be available for Christmas, I'm told. And then, something here that many people might be interested in, and that is a baby crib that calms. Roughly 60% of six-month-olds fall to sleep through the night. Enter CradleWise, and this is an artificial intelligence-powered smart crib and bassinet. Most self-rocking cradles respond when a baby cries, but CradleWise uses sensors to detect a child's first stirrings. Based on the baby's sleep schedule, the crib then determines whether to soothe them back to sleep with bouncing motions or to let them wake up. And if you'd like one other suggestion, here it is. A bank account is the key to financial security and success in the U.S., but for many immigrants, barriers to entry like Social Security numbers and steep fees put an opening of an account really out of reach. Well, last February, the money transfer provider Remitly Passbook is an app that allows customers to open a bank account using a range of ID options, including an immigration ID or a passport without any banking fees. Clients can also use the account, which comes with a Visa debit card, to transfer money to families abroad. And for newcomers to the U.S., this passport may be a financial stepping stone. And now, Looks like we're getting down to the very end of our program for today. Let me tell you a bit about what's going to be in our next program. In our next program, I'm going to be talking about the River of Grass and the restoration of it. The River of Grass, you may know of as the Everglades in South Florida. In addition to talking about the Everglades, I'm going to be telling you why so many South American animals are smaller than their counterparts on other continents. Also, I can tell you when and how stamps started featuring famous Americans who weren't politicians. So if you're curious about that, please tune in. We'd really like to have you. Remember, it's me and you, and we'll have a little bit of fun, a little bit of entertainment. And so until then, this is Dan Dillman asking you, be safe out there, take care, wear your mask, keep your social distance, please. Have a good day, my friends. Tune in to a little of this, a little of that. The next time that we're available and hear about the Everglades, as I was telling you. Until then, good day. I'll be here waiting for you.